Blog Talk Radio.
By Kip Gross out there in hot Arizona. Yours truly, Mark Mancini in hot Los Angeles. 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, 30 minutes goes by quick. Catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts. Powered now by Mancini Media. So as I lay that red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. The threes, Kip, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And I figured I'd bring you a great guy to talk to today, and I'll sit back and wait till the end of this show to wind this thing down. But Warren Brewster, 1980 World Series champ, will be joining you. But other than that, my friend, it's a hot one all over the place.
Yeah, it is, no doubt. I'm in Phoenix, Scottsdale area right now. It's 113 right now, so any of you guys think it's hot? You're at just dial it back, and you're almost in the cool weather compared to where I'm at right now. Kipgross.com, go on my website, and you can reach me that way. And looking forward to this day with Warren. It should be a good one.
Okay, Warren, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you. Hope you're doing real good too, my friend. I've known you for so many years. I'm just so blessed to be a part of this with you too.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me, and Kip, thank you. I appreciate it. And I know we're gonna have a great time. I can be reached at Brewster, BRUSSTAR40@gmail.com.
Okay, Kip, I'm going to give it over to you. You can take it away for 20-something minutes. I'll come back in the last five. I know you guys are going to reminisce about the 80s and 90s and then some.
Yeah, you know, I got some interesting questions for you because you had a really interesting career. You know, you played 9 years in the big leagues after a couple years of playing the minor leagues. And you got the distinction of never starting a game in the big leagues in those 9 years, which is for me, I think it's pretty odd myself. But you had a great career. I mean, a 28-16 record as a reliever, that's really hard to do. And you posted a 3.51 ERA. And for all those years to do that, I think that's really incredible. Did you ever want to start in the big leagues?
Well, yeah, I did. You know, I didn't realize what I had, you know, until I got to the big leagues, and I was a sinker slider. I only had two pitches, so I didn't have that third pitch that would have been able to make me a starter. My job was basically to come in out of the bullpen when there were runners on base. I could throw. I had a good sinker, so I'd get a ground ball, get out of jams. So that was kind of my niche. And then when I got to the big leagues, there was only four of us in the bullpen. So I pitched from the first to the seventh. Then Tubb McGraw, Gene Garber, or Ron Reed picked up the eighth and ninth. So and it worked really well, you know. And Danny Ozark was the manager, and he just went with the hot hand. Whoever was hot, he kept running out there day after day until you gave up a couple runs, and then he went to the next guy. But my niche was early in the middle innings, you know. So I got a lot of cheap wins because I'd come into a one pitch, get a ground ball, double play, and we had a very offensive team. They'd score five runs the next half inning, and I'd get a W.
Yeah. You played on some really, really good teams, but I knew you were a sinker slider guy. I mean, you only averaged giving up a half a home run in every nine innings, something like that. That's crazy good in today's world. And any world for that matter, but to be able to do what you did, that means you had to have a lot of starters that loved having you follow them up in the game because of those double plays that you turned. So I'm sure you had a lot of starters that just said, "Yeah, is Warren coming in?" And they'd see you coming right out of the bullpen and say, "Yes, this is my guy today."
But I had another part of my career. I had 103 or 104 innings without giving up a home run. I got to 100 innings, and funny story. My father told me I was facing the Dodgers, and I came in and I loaded the bases, and Dusty Baker came up, and my dad was listening to Vin on the radio, and Vin Scully said, "If you're thinking home run right here, forget it. Brewster hasn't given up a home run in 104 innings and gone." So my dad, the next time my dad was in L.A., he got all over Ben about that. He said, "You jinxed my son. What are you doing?" Yeah, so it was a great story. You know, everybody's got Ben Scully stories. What a great, one of the greatest, if not the greatest broadcaster ever.
Yeah, he was,
you
he was something.
Some story.
There's a lot of good ones out there. But Vinny was very, very good. Hey, I got another question for you about you in the minor leagues, and I want you to tell everybody what you did, because I don't even know what it is, but you had to do something. You had a little control problem in a couple of years there where you walked a whole bunch of guys, and then just out of nowhere, it changed. What happened? What'd you do? What'd you find?
Well, I started. I was starting when I was in high A ball, and I walked 90 or 96 in 165 innings. The next year I went to double A, and I walked 90 and 199 and two thirds. And then the next year was my first big league camp. And the very first day of big league spring training, Billy Connors, who was our AAA pitching coach at the time, Billy said, I broke off my hip and I couldn't get my arm up. And he said, "You ever tried breaking off your leg, off your knee?" I said, "No." And all of a sudden, it was like somebody turned the lights on. It was like they let handcuffs off my wrists. It was, oh, my God, I knew exactly where the ball was going. I mean, I could hit spots. And just a quick story about that. Dale Barrow, when Dale came up to the big leagues, he was like 0 for 28 the first month of the season, or the month when he got called up. And we were playing in Pittsburgh, and I'm come set, and Omar Moreno's over at me. He's jumping around like crazy. So I always threw the ball where I looked, and I picked up Barra, and I put the ball right between the R's in his back. You know, and it just, because I could throw the ball where I was looking, the ball went. So it got to be very easy, and it was just concentration to get ground balls. And if the ball above mid-thigh, the umpire gave me a new one. I learned that in a hurry.
Yeah, those high sinkers, they travel a long ways, don't they? No
yes,
question
they
about
do.
It. I basically say the same thing. You know, you miss a half inch, and you're just hey, throw me a new one out here because I need one.
Right.
Because it's got a souvenir.
Exactly.
So you played at Fresno State, and there's been a lot of really, really good ball players come out of Fresno State that played in the big leagues. And, you know, Mark Gardner comes to mind for me right away. And tell us just a little bit about that up there, why it is that program has been so good over the years.
Well, when I got drafted by the Giants out of high school and junior college, I needed a place to go and a college to go to. And so I started talking to the scouts and said, you know, who's the best pitching coach in Northern California or California? And they all said the same thing. Bob Bennett at Fresno State's the best. And he put about, I would say, 15 to maybe 20 pitchers in the big leagues. He knew mechanics, and he taught me. I was four-seaming and cutting the ball, and I came back for the first full year with him, and he said, "We're going to teach you a sinker today." And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "This is the ball you're going to pitch inside to the hitters instead of outside." And I said, "Oh, okay." Because that was the only hits I were giving up were balls out over the plate. And then I started pitching inside, and that changed everything. It changed my whole career. And that's what really made me was Bob had the foresight to teach me how to make the ball move and get the most out of my ability. You know, and I would see him. One time I was in San Diego, and I was out to dinner with my wife, and Bob was there at a conference, and he and I stood in a salad line, and we held up. We started talking pitching, and everybody stopped. You know, we held everybody up for about 10 minutes. You know, we'd get together, and I'd love to talk pitching with him. And I was very fortunate before he passed away to be able to spend 15 minutes with him right before he passed.
Yeah, that's great. You know, isn't that fun though when you can sit down and talk to somebody baseball and it just flows because you're such on the same page. I've a bunch of buddies that, you know, we'll just talk, and it's like we're talking to ourselves, you know, when they talk back
to
us.
Right.
And so I know
right.
exactly what you're talking about. You get to a certain level, and that lingo that everybody uses is the same, and it's
right.
really hard for other people to understand that, because it's like, you guys talk exactly the same, and you're the same person. Well, you know, that's what we did, and that's who we learned from. We're the best in the world, and that's who we are, who we are. Hey, I got another
right.
one here for you. You were drafted 4 different times. Why did you wait till the 4th time with the Phillies?
Well, the best thing was the Giants. The Eddie Montague Sr., you know, Eddie, the umpire?
Right.
His father at the time was the scouting director for the Giants. And they told me, if you sign, we're sending you to Great Falls. You're going to be in rookie league. But the best thing for you is to go to college. You know, get your education. Go as far as you can in your education and continue to develop. And he was that. I mean, that headed me in the right direction. If it wouldn't have been for that, and had I signed, I wouldn't have got out of probably rookie ball. I had no clue what I was doing until I got to Bob Bennett at Fresno State. I threw it, what I said, I used to throw it north. That's all I did. I had no clue where it was going.
Right. I can relate to that, because I was the same way. I come from Western Nebraska, and we didn't have scouts out there growing up, or hell, we didn't even play high school baseball, so. But, you know, so many scouts told me that if they had saw me in or seen me in Legion ball, that I probably would have been drafted pretty high. But, you know, after
mm-hmm.
looking back, you're probably right. It probably wouldn't have been a good idea for myself either, because I needed to be seasoned and actually learn how to pitch a little bit in college like you did. And you were the recipient of having some really good pitching coaches that helped you with mechanics. And that's what I think is really lacking today. Is the mechanics in these pitchers today. They just try to throw the ball through a wall, and
right.
that's why we're having these surgeries. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think about baseball today and how everything's going with the new rules and all the Tommy John surgeries going on?
Well, yeah, I'm, again, old school. I'm sure you too are, Kip. And, the 2 years I started in the minor leagues, I had 25 starts in A-ball, and I had 17 complete games. I had 27 starts in Double A. I had 19 complete games. I went 9. It was my day to play, and I was going 9. I didn't care, you know, what it mattered. It's just what the score was anyway. I was going to play, so I wanted to play the whole game, you know, and it was like an ego thing. And I got myself in shape to do it, and I loved pitching 9 innings. I loved, because that's where I learned to pitch. You learn to pitch in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning. When you don't have your good stuff, you're starting to lose it. And you got to figure out how to get people out, you know, and that's, that, to me, I attribute that where I really learned how to pitch and what to do, how to set up hitters and how to go about my business, you know. So I'm old school, and to see guys come in one inning, you know, I pitched multiple innings. I'd come in and pitch a third of an inning. I'd come in and pitch 3 or 4 innings. It didn't matter, and I had days where I pitched back-to-back days, 3 innings one day and 2 the next. I was built for it that way, and I was conditioned that way. Now today, where guys are throwing 95 to 100 miles an hour, it's a whole different game. They've changed the thought process, you know, and the hitters are launching balls. They're just trying to hit balls out of the ballpark. The game has completely changed since I played. You know, so it's a totally different game. You know, it's interesting, but on the same vein, I'm old school, so I want to go out there and, you know, I five and fly was, we laughed at those guys. You know, they were far and few between when we played.
No doubt about it. Obviously I'm on the same school that you are with all that old school stuff. And you know, you always want to finish the game you started, but today
right.
it's just these guys.
That's your
just,
game.
It blows me away the amount of money they're making. And they're breaking down, trying to throw as hard as they can. I just don't understand. They say, well, you know, the averages go up a third time around. Yeah, but they go down too sometimes if you get in there and you learn how to pitch. And you know, there were games I wouldn't throw nothing but a fastball until somebody hit it, and then you know,
right.
next second
exactly.
round I might mix in a slider or a changeup to them because they hit the fastball the first time around. So you know, it I don't think the pitching, learning how to pitch is like it used to be when we were playing. And
right.
like I said, you don't have to throw the kitchen sink at them the first time around. That's why they're not seeing, they're not seeing the hitters in the third time around, is my opinion. But it's just crazy.
Right.
And what I wanted to say to you is, I mean, the players that you played with over your career, is it's almost staggering that the names that you played with, you know, like the Bob Boones, the Mike Schmidt, the Bake McBride, the Tim McCarvers, the Davey Lopes, Steve Carlton, Jim Cott, Tug McGraw. You called up because of Tug McGraw getting hurt, correct?
Right. Right, exactly. Yes.
And
I was fortunate enough to play with Pete for 4 years.
Yeah, I haven't even gotten him yet. But it's just these guys, you know, they hit for a decent average in today's game. It's, you know, if you hit around 200, you know, with 20 home runs, you're a superstar today. And I just look at like a Pete Rose here, and it's like they said, well, Pete wouldn't even be playing today. I'm like, how could you not get a guy that had as many hits as he had in his career, and he's not going to play on your team? And what a hustler, you know, and playing the way he played the game hard, which you don't see today again because of the rules change. And it just it's mind-blowing to me. I mean, you play with Ryan Sandberg. You know, it just and the names go on and on and on. Carlton Fisk, Harold Baines, you know, Jerry Kuzman, and Lee Smith. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many Hall of Famers did you play with, for God's sakes?
Fergie Jennings was another. Yeah.
Yeah, like
I played
I'm looking at
10 Hall
of Famers. Did you learn anything from like a Steve Carlton and the Jody or the Lee Smiths of the world? Did you learn anything from those guys?
I learned a great deal from Steve Carlton. You know, he took a bad rap because he didn't talk to the press, but with his teammates, he was phenomenal. He was a great teammate, as good a teammate as you could possibly have. And I'll tell you a quick story about Steve. We were in Chicago, you know, at Wrigley Field, and you know how small that clubhouse is. You're mm-hmm. dressing in shifts, basically. So the regulars are going out, and they're getting ready for BP. And so the pitchers are in there later dressing and stuff. And we had a left-handed reliever named Kevin Sauchier. And he talked to Lefty. He said, Lefty, how do you throw your slider? And Lefty's standard answer was, you hold it like this and throw that out of it. And about 5 minutes later, he came back. And he said, the higher you get your elbow, the more downward break you're going to get. The flatter your elbow, the flatter the break. And I said, oh, my God. Put that in the bank, you know. Now that set up. Now that when the count got 2-0, and I had to throw a slider for a strike, I'm going to throw a flat one. If I'm going to get ahead 0-2, I'm going to throw get on top more and go down with it. So I changed planes with it. So that changed everything. You know, it's just little things like that on a daily basis that you pick up from a Steve Carlton, a Jerry Kuzman, Tug McGraw, guys that have been around for. When I was playing, they'd been around 12 to 15 to 18 years, you know. So you learn. And the one guy that took me under his wing was Ron Reed. And there's another guy, not quite in the Hall of Fame, just got put into the Phillies, had a Hall of Fame career. And he started and relieved, and he took me under his wing and showed me the ropes on how to pitch in the bullpen. You know, get up, you throw. When you're ready, go pitch to pitch with the pitcher. Don't leave it down here. You know, and that was the most important thing he taught me was to get ready. You get ready in a hurry, but then once you're ready, stop, you know, and slow down and just go pitch to pitch. It's just little things like that you learn as you're going along in your big league career. And it's something, it's just those little things you learn that really help extend your career. And it's stuff that as when you become a veteran, you give back to the rookies and explain to what you've learned.
Right, right. You know, that is really outstanding that you learned that from Steve Carlton in just one little paragraph saying, you know, yeah,
right.
Actually added a pitch or two to your arsenal, and you didn't even know it was there the time, just by one little – and it's just feeling in your arm of getting it a little bit higher on getting on top of the baseball a little different is all that is. And so you learned that from him. Probably helped you out a whole bunch in certain situations that is like, my God, I could throw a different pitch here. Yeah, so that's really, really great to that. So – I got a good one here for you. I know you pitched for the Phillies. You didn't play on a losing team with the Phillies. You guys won every year had a winning record.
Right.
You didn't have a losing record till what? Got to the Cubs.
Right, till 83. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really because most players go through some losing spells with a team here or there. You know, especially back days when you know people weren't changing teams every other day. So and had all the money to throw it. So that I think that's really great. And so. For you to do what you did over those years, I just look at your career and say, wow, I really do, because, you know, you won, you're a winner for one, and your teams you played on were for winners. And to be able to play with these players you played with, I mean, they all know you because you helped so many of those pitchers and teams get through those wins. And I know you don't look at yourself like that because most ball players don't, but it's an amazing career you had. Do you have any idea how hard you threw a baseball?
My dad told me that they clocked me at 90 to 93, somewhere in that neighborhood.
That's old guns. So that was today probably throwing 96, 97 miles an hour. So, yeah, that's the one thing today's guns, you know, they're more accurate today, but they're a lot different at the speeds. And that's what the difference between when we played and when they're playing and what they're seeing today with these 100-mile-an-hour pitches. All, you know, they're basically 93, 94 when we played. So just wanted to set that straight. You did throw hard. You were a hard sinker ball pitcher, which was great. So,
I'd love to know what Nolan Ryan threw.
Oh God, who knows, right? He just threw hard.
I got to hit off him. I hit off him one time when I was with the Cubs, and the catcher. Oh man, I can't remember his name. But I walked in and I tapped him on the shin guard and said, "I'm going to come up here. I'm going to stand here and listen. I'm not thinking about swinging." And he walked me on five pitches.
Well, yeah, he had that in him. He had those games where he could get the walks going for sure. But my God, how many guys strike out? So you could actually hear the ball going by you, right?
Oh yeah, I mean it was that sound when it hit the catcher's glove was unbelievable, just amazing. Yeah,
like Tiger Woods hit the golf ball, just totally different sound. That's crazy.
Right.
So I want your wife's name is Jennifer, correct?
Yes.
And she actually is the president of the Doug McGraw Foundation. What does that all do? What's the foundation all about?
It's about brain tumor, and she's now going to partner up with Darren Dalton, the Darren Dalton Foundation, and they're going to work together. It's the betterment of life for people with brain tumors and what they go through, glioblastoma. And she did a lot of research. She was Tug's caregiver the last 6 months that Tug was alive. And she took care of him. And then they met Dr. Friedman at Duke University. And Dr. Friedman was Tug's final doctor. And they would go. Tug wanted to, she moved up in a house with him in Philly. And then they would come down to Duke from time to time. And then when he couldn't travel anymore, and it got towards the end, he wanted to pass away at Tim McGraw's farm in Tennessee, outside of Nashville.
Oh, so that's awesome. Good for your wife, Jennifer. That's really, really good stuff. I really enjoy hearing that for sure. So you're really connected in with the Napa Valley College, correct? Pitching coach and you're the same there. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, I've been there since 1989 on and off. I went into pro ball 1 year in San Bernardino and an independent in the California League, and then I coached with the Philly organization for 6 years. And then in the times in between, I've been here at Napa Valley College because it was I played there a year, and when I got out of high school, it was what do I do now, and went to Napa Valley College and got some direction. So I figured all the places to go back is to teach kids how to pitch, get an education, and send them on. What we try to do is send them on to a four-year school. And we send just about every player that we have somewhere in the country to a four-year school. So we guarantee you, if you come and play for us for 2 years, get the education, do the schoolwork, we will send you on to a four-year college at a place where you can play. And they generally get scholarships to some degree, and the kids have had we've had very good success doing it.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, you know, I've sent quite a few kids into college ball, and I always try to tell them all the same thing: go to a junior college. You got a lot. Go to a junior college, learn how to pitch. You're gonna play for sure. But all these people these days, like D1, I got to go to D1. The next thing you know, they're sitting for a year or 2 years. And now, you know, they're transferring out because they didn't play. Well, if you'd went to a two-year school to begin with, you know, you'd have gotten all that knowledge and all those innings or all those at-bats to play. And I just think that's the way to go. So I commend you for doing that. And you're in the Hall of Fame there now, right?
Yes, I am. Yes. Yeah, I was inducted into the first class.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really good stuff. So, Mark, are you still hanging around out there?
Yeah, I've been hanging around, and man, oh man, I'm listening to you guys go back and forth, little baseball talk, as we start to wind this thing down with about 3 minutes and some change. I can't help to ask either one of you, and I'll start with you, Warren, first. Is there anything you'd change in baseball today with all these rule changes? I know Kip and I have talked about it, and we've talked about it as well, but is there any other things, more or less, that you'd look at and say, hey, this has got to go?
Well, the thing that bothers me is that ghost runner in the 10th inning. That bothers me. When you give a guy a 3 second base, you know, you got to earn. And it seems like, to me, the road team has an advantage, a big advantage, because they got a guy at second. They can do whatever, move him over, drive him in, whatever. And it, a lot of times it seems like it opens the floodgates up. You know, so that's about the one thing that I would change. But I love the pitch clock to get guys going, because I got the ball and threw the ball. The more time I had to think, the more trouble I got in. You know, I wanted to react to the catcher's sign. The catcher puts the fingers down. Here comes the ball. Get it back. Here comes the ball again. I wanted to work quick. I want my defense on their toes, not on their heels.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm not a fan of the pitch clock per se, but I just wish the umpires would have just said, hey, hitter, get in the box. It's time to get in the box.
Right.
And if they'd just done that, we wouldn't have that pitch clock right now. I mean, we were both fast workers, and that's what sinker ballers are, you know. The quicker you go, the more sink you get, the more ground balls you get, the quicker you get in that dugout to make your players happy.
Right.
And see, that's another reason I really believe, Warren, why you had a winning record is because guys wanted to play behind you. And I really believe that, you know, they talk about Nolan Ryan having a 500 record, you know, for the stuff he had. You know, when you're walking guys and striking out a lot of guys, I think you just get a lackadaisical behind you. And it's like they just really don't want to play baseball that day as much as they do when a guy's working fast like you and myself did. I really believe that has a big factor in that.
I was looking at my bubblegum card with my oldest son one night, and I said, no, I don't think I gave up too many unearned runs. And I looked, and I'd pitched 4 years in the big leagues before I gave up an unearned run. And I gave up like three in my whole career, three or four.
Wow.
I mean, it was the defense that I had behind me the whole – I mean, Larry Bowa was my shortstop both in Philadelphia and in Chicago with the Cubs. And Sandberg was the second baseman. Say was the third baseman with the Cubs. And I had Schmidt, Bowa, Trio, Rose in the infield in Philadelphia. So, you know, it was amazing. You know, so all I had to do was, because they're going to make the plays. And a game goes on quicker.
Yeah, it does. And I've always believed that about throw strikes. Let them put the ball in play, and your infield's going to come in, and they're going to reward you by swinging the bats and getting your runs. And I'll go to my grave about that, because you just look at all the knuckleball pitchers and all the strikeout pitchers. Their records just aren't what you'd think they are over time. So I'm in total agreement with you about that.
Wow.
Right.
Hey, Kip and Warren. We're down to about a minute, and we should continue this next week. And the reason why I want to continue it is, some of the listeners are saying, why don't we compare the 1980 Phillies with Warren Brewster against the 1990 Cincinnati Reds and Kip Gross?
Oh yeah, that's a great
comparison.
Yeah,
we could do.
Yeah, you gotta have some. Kip, you gotta have the story about the Nasty Boys now.
Yeah, you know, that was just one of those teams that they weren't really known until after the year. Most of the team wasn't, and that's just kind of how the team was when you were just stacked with the Schmidts, you know, and the Boas and the names that you played with. In my opinion, I think you played with like 8 or 9 Hall of Famers, for God's sakes.
Right.
Most people can't believe they played against that many, and you played with that many.
Again, I was in the right place.
You guys are going to have to reminisce. I'll give you each other's number after the show. You guys are going to have to reminisce. We got to get you back in here. Kip, as we wind this thing down, man, 30 minutes goes by quick. You moderated it great, and I can't wait to do this again next Tuesday, my friend. Let everybody know how they can get a hold of you.
No problem. KipGross.com. We're getting my book out here going pretty quick. Actually, we're starting to back up. Had some problems with it. Figure it out book. But people, these podcasts with Warren like this, these are really informative. And I love having guys like you on here, Warren, because it's just fun hearing the stories and what you have to say about your time when you're playing. So thank you very much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me, Kip. It's been a pleasure. I really enjoy it. It's a great time. Thank you.
Wow. Warren, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you. You're all over the place, and I'm just so blessed to call you a brother and a friend as well.
I can be reached at Brewster, Brewstar, 40 at gmail.com.
Yeah, and as we wind this show, our good buddy Randy Lurch is convinced that I was flipping him off there in Pittsburgh when he hit the two home runs to knock the Pirates out of the division and give the Phillies the division that year. We'll have to talk about that another day. As we wind this thing up, for Kip Gross in hot Arizona, Warren Brewster in Napa Valley out there in California, yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. Catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. We'll be back again next Tuesday across these airwaves with Kip. And who knows who else is coming in here. We'd love to get Warren back in here again. Till then, have a blessed one, and thanks for tuning in.